Mr. McKnight, you are the managing partner at Bendini, Lambert & Locke, is that correct?
Yes.
Did Mr. Lambert, as senior partner, give you any instructions regarding my employment?
He did.
And Mr. McKnight, do you usually follow Mr. Lambert's instructions?
Objection. Vague, ambiguous.
Sustained.
He ought to be kept on a short leash. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 230. I'm Scott Johnson, joined tonight by Brian. He's so overcome with grief, he'll just sit there in that sprinkler all day long, done away.
Hey, Abby, wait. I haven't even whispered you the best part yet. I signed us up for a Dianetics class.
Oh, great. Now she's running away. Hold on. Oh, I care. I'm great at running.
Hey, everybody, look at me. I'm running. Hey, you guys hear that? It sounds like someone's playing a piano.
Yeah.
I mean, for like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it might be. I was hearing that, too. I was wondering about that. Also with us, Randy Ed Harris Goggles Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Well, you saw the ghost of Tom Cruise on Union Avenue. Just try to stop his actions, but he runs faster than you. Now, security, they did see him as he escaped with a crash. And the only thing between him and freedom is a man with a mustache. He was running in Memphis.
The running of the Cruise.
Dude, nice. That was a full-fledged performance piece. I really enjoyed it.
Did you practice much?
No.
Oh, come on. It sounded like you practiced. It sounded
good.
Really good.
It was pretty good.
I actually wrote that within the 3 minutes before Scott started the show.
Wow. Goodness gracious.
Nice. Good job.
Brian, also with us. Brian, more like Gene Quadruple Horn Ibbett. What? Hello, Brian? Did we lose a bit? Oh, we did.
Is that part of the gag?
That ain't good. Oh, that's terrible. Hold on.
Sorry.
All right, we're back. Sorry, everybody. Finally with us, what did I even say? Oh, Brian, more like Gene Quadruple Horn Ibbett.
No.
As if we never heard it. All right, go.
Right. Hey, guys. Want to have some eggs?
Yes.
Want to have some eggs naked?
Yes.
Mm. Want to have them naked in a train?
No.
Want to have them naked in a rain? Want to have them with a goat? What about oral and whatnot?
Diabetes.
Diabetes. Thinking of the candy.
You invoked it early, dude. You invoked it early. I love
that. Oh, the diabetes.
No, the oral and whatnot. Yeah. The oral and whatnot is such a great thing. So I had never seen this movie, so I didn't even know he was in this. I had no idea. That was a big surprise. I didn't know him. I didn't know Gary Busey. I didn't know. I had no idea. I don't know why I didn't see it. I know this was the big hit of 93.
No. It wasn't.
It was a pretty big hit. Third highest grossing film in the States. That was pretty big.
Yeah, people loved it. I mean, everybody was still hot and heavy about the books. They were huge in Grisham at the time. And everybody was super stoked about it.
Trying
this.
To see that year.
And people still like Tom Cruise at this point.
Not only that, a number of big awards happened for it. Like the Firm was up for best supporting actress in the form of Holly Hunter. She didn't win, but she did win. For her role in The Piano as...
she didn't... Not her. Somebody else played the piano.
No,
right?
No, that was her. No, was not Hunter. The piano. I'm saying the movie The Piano, you dingleberry.
But there was all kinds of piano in this movie.
I know there was. There was. But Anna Paquin also basically won for The Piano in the Best Supporting Actress thing, beating her out. So that was the Paquin year when she was like a little kid.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
But anyway, then they had a bunch of music stuff and some other things that they... And I guess it did. Let's see. Did it win for music? Hold on. Let's find this here.
It was definitely nominated for the damn piano tinkle music.
It was a really weird choice.
I'm going to totally be the guy who defends Dave Grusin on this show, apparently.
No, okay, you're going to have to because this is the worst score I've heard on a film in a long time. Oh. And I'm talking about film sack films.
I hated it. I thought it was awful.
I hated it too.
Really?
Yeah. Listen.
Don't get me wrong.
I feel like it was so new and fresh compared to the usual swirling orchestral stuff. I mean, it has a very like stripped down, bare kind of feel where it's actually, it feels like it's actually more prominent as a score than most orchestral background, James Horn, or Horner.
I agree with you that it wasn't orchestral and it wasn't classic. I agree with you. It was mm-hmm. it was an attempt at Memphis jazz, but they only had one theme, and they just used that theme over and over to the point that I just wanted to scream.
I kept expecting it to go
2.5 hours.
I expected it to go.
It was a long movie.
I expected do 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 do, because that's basically what that was the entire time. I agree that it was different and unique for sure. It's not sure it holds up. Maybe then it was like, whoa.
Different does always mean better. Different sometimes just means
no. And I definitely agree with you. For me, this was a nice, refreshing change. A very refreshing, different.
Like I think if it had been so obvious and in your face,
yeah,
I think I might have been able to enjoy it. But
watching us on Netflix, we're surely seeing and hearing a transfer that wasn't intended for this kind of level of sound design. Like, there's no way that the original filmmakers wanted the sound to overpower things at different spots in the film.
The voice dialogue stuff was way. I don't know why some stuff's like that and some things aren't like that. There's plenty of examples where that's all fine. It seems like there's a period of movies from like 89 to like 96, and in that range, their audio transfers are weird in the streaming age, and I don't know why that is. Somebody out there's maybe a tech or somebody who knows why that happened, or was there a weird stereo transfer at the time, or were we not quite to Dolby 2.0, or I don't know what.
This is a film where it's too soft when it's soft and it's too loud when it's loud, and more than once, like about 3 times in the film, there are two people talking and the music is so much louder than them that you don't know what they're saying.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's too reggae when you're in Barbados.
Oh, I thought that was a montage. I thought that was just a music montage.
Oh, you thought it was another montage, so. Yeah.
I'm like, we're going along, piano, 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 yeah. Piano, 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 still drunk.
When
still
he was
drunk.
Whispering to her in the music all loud, maybe that was a scene where you could actually hear what he was saying, but in the movie, in the transfer, it was all muddied out. Hey, what movie are we talking about? I'll tell you which one. It's The Firm, and Scott Fletcher has more.
The Firm. When a Harvard Law School grad joins a prestigious firm, The Firm. He ignores the warnings of his wife, who fears the lucrative deal sounds too good to be true. Soon, he finds himself entangled in a web of mafia connections and FBI operatives.
Ooh, that sounds intriguing and stark and
it's like a good book.
Well, it sure does. Now, I never read it, so I have no idea. But the source material, nothing. I have nothing going into The Firm, and I don't even know why. I don't know what the deal was in 93. Too much Jurassic Park or something. I didn't want to go for a thriller. Or I don't know what.
I want you to know that the reason the movie's so long is because the book is very, very complicated. Mm. And for whatever reason, they decided to shoehorn in every little detail from the book into the movie. Mm. And it's so freaking confusing why they didn't leave out all of these extra characters that contribute nothing to the story is... It's weird. Mm. But this movie contains all sorts of little things that are great in the book because the book takes the time to flesh them out, you know, like Tom Cruise's relationship with his brother and his brother's contacts and so forth.
All that stuff's interesting. And also a lot of interesting character actors are showing up. Like, I really like David Strathairn. He's great. We've seen him in other film sack movies and always a treat, that guy.
Do you feel like he's Tom Cruise's brother?
Nope.
No, can't really see any sort of relations.
No,
me and he are not relations. Yeah.
But he was sporting the typical prison hairdo with the 5 o'clock shadow.
I liked it.
With the grease back hair.
He looks pretty cool. I think that guy looks cool. He looks very professorial now in things he does now. But back in the day, I think he had a little suave to him. I think he looked all right. But then you got your Wilford Brimley's and your I forget the guy who always plays Mark Twain.
Hal Holbrook.
Hal Holbrook in it.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, holy he's cow. Awesome. That other guy that was hanging with those three all the time, I forget his name, but he's great.
The three old man.
Gene Triplehorn. Okay, I got a confession to make. When I turned this on, I went, Gene Triplehorn plays his wife, and I hadn't seen her yet, so I thought that sounded really weird. So I'm waiting for it to come because in my head,
that's a dude's name.
In the name Gene Triplehorn makes it sound like a 63-year-old woman, regardless of your age. Yeah.
Hey, Triplehorn.
Ah, Gene Triplehorn back on screen finally after all these years. That's what I thought I was going to get with her, but she's a year younger than Cruz, so it's not like she wasn't perfect or just fine for the role. You know her as a wife of
Alex Blake, or who minds
for Waterworld.
No. Oh yeah, Waterworld. Hold on a minute.
How is that not the first thing that you said?
I forgot. I totally forgot. I knew that she was in
because she was in Big Love.
Not even that. Yeah. The one I'm thinking of is the one where not the hand that rocks the cradle. What's the one where what's her name's trying to kill what's his name and is totally
Very
obsessed?
Bad things.
Basic Instinct.
Basic Instinct. She's the wife in that. Yes. That's not the cheat on wife.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, that's
she's
all
the,
I could think
she's
of.
She's the one not showing her parts.
Yeah. Well, she kind of did in that.
Well.
And she's sort of naked in Waterworld. But Waterworld, she doesn't matter in Waterworld. What matters in Waterworld is a world made of water and dude pees on a tree and he's got gills and there's paper. Now, all those things matter more than that, than her. Anyway, point is, there she was. And I thought, oh yeah, she's young and normal and not a 63-year-old like character actress.
I love it when you describe people.
But Gene Triplehorn, doesn't that sound like an old lady name? It totally does.
It does, yeah.
It does.
And she's fine. She's just fine in this. I mean, you know, better than fine. She's great. Nothing wrong with her.
She's convincing. I think the casting was fantastic.
Mm. I think everybody's
character was really well developed. It's a solid movie.
Do you think they should have had Chick in the Bucket? To me, is that creepy dude from Oz that's in this, the one that was getting the sprinkler
mm-hmm.
on him?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he's great. Lamar. I like watching him. Yeah, Lamar. He's interesting to watch in pretty much everything I've ever seen him in, and he's really interesting these days. But he's a Chick in the Bucket to me because I thought, and again, I haven't read the book, so I don't know where Lamar's arc goes, but he just seemed like a guy we were going to see have either a grisly end or a terrible disappearance or something bad in the end was going to happen to that guy. And he just kind of, that was it. You don't have him trying to, you know, come to grips with yet another one of his coworkers being mysteriously blown up out at sea and having a sprinkler not affect him for no reason, and then have him just not have any factor later in the movie.
I don't want to push too hard to the end of the movie, but man, it ended unsatisfyingly.
Yeah.
Like with, we've hooked the U-Haul back up to our old beater Celica, and we're going back to Boston. Right. And the only thing that could have made it more of a Hollywood ending would have been if they were listening to the radio, and there was like a news reporter talking about, and the members of the law firm were all arrested today. Like, it was that kind of ending.
Yeah,
it was so, like, after all of this excitement and barely getting out with our lives, we're driving.
I think
back
that was
well. Yeah, who's read the novel? How's the novel end? Different? Is it just does everyone die?
No,
like,
but
what
it's
happens?
A book.
Okay,
you know, like a book doesn't have the visuals, right? You can just explain everything, and I can imagine whatever I want about what that looked like.
Mm. So they could have described them getting in the beater, hooking up the U-Haul and going back home, but they maybe did it in a more thoughtful sort of internal monologue sort of way. And,
sure.
And that's
do
fine.
It differently anyway? Didn't they end up in
okay, now
Kokomo or wherever it was?
No. I think that's Runaway Jury.
Sorry. I'm laughing at
it. I think it's Runaway Jury that you're talking about. And that's the problem with these books is they're all about crooked people trying to hide money in Grand Cayman banks. Boy, was John Grisham just hooked on the idea that people
were
sending. No, I guess we were. You're right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is he still making books? Yeah. John Grisham still busy. Uh-huh.
He's still making the books. Yeah. 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 Selling some stuff on Lulu. Is he
still making books? Is he still writing?
Well, let's find out. It says here writing career, bibliography. We have a movie called Grey Mountain in 2014. He's got a book a year, every year since ever. Yeah. And 2009, he had two of them. He's never missed a year. Oh, two in 2003. I guess the last time I heard of one, though, was The Partner. That's the last. And that was 97 that was written. And then since then, I don't know.
Seems like he's been around forever, but he's only 59. This movie was...
Really?
Yeah, this movie was made before he was 40.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Most recent book, by the way, this one that you're talking about, Gray Mountain. The year is 2008, and Samantha Kofer's career at a huge Wall Street law firm is on the fast track until the recession hurts and she gets downside, furloughed, and escorted out of the building.
Hold on, this sounds weirdly familiar. Yeah.
Basically, it's the same book, new people.
Yeah, they all are.
Wow.
Right.
I mean, you know, whatever.
Well, recession, hey, mob, you know, you just got to keep it current.
Sure, yeah. That's a good point. Some of these... Ford County, I maybe remember hearing about, but the rest of the stuff, like The Confession, the Litigators,
that a thing?
Yeah,
that's not a movie we did, though.
Right.
But
no,
yeah,
we haven't done that one.
He wrote that in 92. I don't know when that movie came out. The Client. So here's his list, and they got real strong at first. A Time to Kill in 89, The Firm in 91, Pelican Brief in 92, and The Client in 93. These are the book releases, not the movies. But that's his big four, really. Those are the ones you think of. Runaway Jury was a few... more in, and then that's, yeah, and then the rest is just time. Whatever. I'm sure he does fine. I'm sure he has a crazy level of.
Oh, I'm sure he owns a third of Arkansas. Like, yeah. The guy is really successful.
Sure, and it's probably all written great. I mean, no one is disputing his writing here. It's all good. I just feel like it's a lot of the same stuff, and it never interested me. So to get back to the point, so people out there freaking out that I wasn't into the Grisham. Revolution in the early 90s. I just didn't read any of these books because it didn't interest me. It's like stuff about lawyers. No, thanks. Where's another Lord of the Rings thing or something? That's all right. I cared about then.
Yeah, same way. I don't think I was into that type of thriller during that time. I wasn't really into thrillers at that age in 93 because I was still in my early 20s. So
I am now, though. Like, I love them now. Yeah. Bring them on. Like, what's a good recent... I like the redo of the... Manchurian Candidate with Denzel Washington. That was great.
That's not a book, Scott. That's a movie.
No, I don't mean. I mean both. I didn't like the movies either back then. You know what's a good one? If you missed it in the 90s, a Tony Scott joint, Enemy of the State.
Speaking of
Gene Hackman,
The little Gene Hackman and the Fresh Prince in there, and it was great. Man, that was good. And that's your total like Smoking Gun, Hush Hush. You know. Stuff going on behind your back. And I guess I had this feeling or I had this understanding that The Firm was about bigger things, that the culty part of it was larger, more broad. And it wasn't just simply, oh, we're skimming money so the mob is paying us more than they're supposed to. Like that stuff, like their weird little mob connections. That seemed really weak sauce to me. I thought Tom Cruise was uncovering some huge, mega international, you know, Illuminati level thing. And it's not that at all.
And it's only mentioned the route he took in the movie is only mentioned briefly in the book, right, Randy? If from the stuff I've read,
what do you mean?
That the way he took him down, the way he took down the firm.
Well, no. But that's the thing. Like, what's so great about the book is that it takes you through his plot to bring down the firm in great detail. And that, like, that's the enduring memory of this book is of him. Like, for example, if you're going to get enough documentation out of this firm to prove a case, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be hard. How are you going to carry all that out? And they come up with John Grisham comes up with a really interesting way for him to do that. And well, I guess the movie is now kind of old and I'm watching it going, oh, okay.
Let's talk about
Holly
the
Hunter
technology.
Set up an office.
They could have used the internet. They could have used the damn internet. Is what they could.
Well, that was the thing. If it was, we've talked about as movies have you know come up that we've reviewed that were from the 80s. We always talk about, oh man, this could have been easily solved with a cell phone. Well, now we're seeing movies that had cell phones, but they weren't smartphones.
Right.
If a smartphone, he could have just taken pictures with his phone and have been done.
Hey, what about one of those little cigarette-looking case cameras I always used in the 60s spy thrillers? That would have been cool.
And it'd have been great.
What the hell was that? Was that a thing?
That's the noise you make with the little cigarette lighter.
Wow. That is sexy. Yeah.
That's the phone you use if you're Ferris Bueller and you just show the Ferrari.
Hey, would you guys not be totally suspicious of two people if they got into an elevator with you and they had matching briefcases? And refused to even look at each other.
I don't think I'd even notice that.
I wouldn't either. Yeah. It's funny you'd say that because I actually thought, this is what's funny. I'm watching that scene and I didn't think, oh, that'd be strange to have two people in the same cases. I thought, this is something Dunaway is going to bring up on the show, that it's weird they had the same case.
It's true, man. I don't know if I obsess on it or what, but I try to think behind the scenes. If you're the person who has to go first of all, you have to go to the store and buy two matching suit briefcases that would be the exact same ones. And if I saw two people, my mind is always looking for those kind of patterns.
But only in movies. If you were in an elevator with you and Ibbot both got an elevator and you both had iPads and you both remarked, hey, we got the same leather cover. It's pretty cool, right?
Now, That would be weird. If we had the exact same cover that, you know, that could... Because we're talking about briefcases. Even in just this movie alone, there's like a huge plethora of different types of briefcases, all the way from your diabetes beaten up.
So this is the water. Is this the water of this movie? Is that what you're telling us? This is all water, right? Isn't it? It's like water. It briefcases is. Are water from Dunaway.
So it, what, I think it depends on where you are.
I was waiting to see like a thermos with a bowl of soup in Wilford Brimley's briefcase. Like that thing was so battered and like bulging.
Yeah.
Right? Like, my grandfather had this briefcase and he's handed it down generation after generation.
Yep.
I was sure there was a gun in that thing, man.
Yeah. Well, there probably was honestly.
It depends on where you are.
Mm.
In Tom Cruise's position, yes, there's a problem when you see this.
Yeah.
Now, at my place of business, if I got on the elevator and three coworkers got on, all wearing the exact same T-shirt, I wouldn't even notice.
Yeah,
because that's what they do.
I don't think
that's where you work. Right.
That's a good point,
though.
Switched
them while they were standing behind you.
They're all wearing Hearthstone shirts that day, and you're not even going
to
notice.
It's in a different culture because since I live in a small to medium-sized town, everybody shops the same places for their clothes, so you have to be extremely careful when you're buying clothes locally, because there's a really good chance you're going to accidentally have the same stupid shirt and you're not going to be wearing it nearly as well as the other guy.
Are people cognizant of their carefulness about buying shirts in that small town? Like, when you go to the store, do you go, I better not get that because that looks like something Bill up the street would have?
True story. I mean, you'd be surprised. I think about this all the time when I go to the local shops because I see they only buy like three or four of the same pattern or style usually. And if there's any more than that, they usually end up clearancing them because people won't buy them because it's just, once you see somebody else wear it, you're not going to wear it. You're not going to buy that shirt. It's embarrassing to be somewhere with the same clothes.
Well, it's a good thing your town doesn't have an Aeropostale nearby because everybody would be wearing the same.
Oh, yeah. That's a true story.
Advertising name everywhere they go. All right. Well, there's some interesting bits about this movie here. Directed by Sidney Pollack, which is kind of a strange film for him. He's more known for things like Tootsie and... Yeah. Comedies.
Did we watch Tootsie? We saw 9 to 5. We didn't see Tootsie.
No, we've not seen 9 to 5. Wait, did he direct 9 to 5?
We saw 9 to 5.
No, I said we've seen 9 to 5, but we haven't seen Tootsie. For some reason, I always put those two in the same.
Yeah. I thought by bringing that up, you meant he directed it. But let's see. He's known for Tootsie, Out of Africa, Sabrina, which was right after this, Havana, which was terrible. Mm. I guess that was more of a
Was that Dirty Dancing? No, that is Dirty Dancing.
No, that's the one. That's a very
Havana
bad.
Nights.
Yes. Yeah.
Dirty Dancing 2, Havana Nights.
Jeremiah Johnson, which is actually a pretty cool movie. So he's known for some stuff that isn't just straight up comedies or whatever, but been around forever. I always liked him as an actor. He would show up in like bit parts and stuff. For example, let's see. I really liked him in The Sopranos. He was great in that. I'm skipping down here. Hold on. Who's in some of his own movies? That's not what I'm looking for. Anyway, he's in stuff. And I always liked
him.
Oh,
he's King of the Hill. He was Grant Trimble. Sweet.
Grant Trimble?
Wait, he was Grant Trimble.
Grant Trimble.
I don't remember that character. Eyes Wide Shut. That's the one I'm thinking of. Another Tom Cruise joint.
Was he one of the sex people?
I don't remember
movie?
What he did. I remember him being in a bathroom talking to Tom Cruise for a long period of time.
Talking to Tom Cruise in the bathroom in like a full-on leather gimp suit. Is that what he was?
That movie is still completely beyond my
sexual comprehension.
Desire to comprehend. I don't understand. I don't understand. Like, you know what it's like? It's like the Crash movie that isn't the good one, but the one where they all crash and then like want to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a hard time with the premise of it because maybe there's somebody someplace that thinks that's hot.
Right.
But I don't think it's even as big. Like, the movie makes this idea seem like, oh, it's a huge deal. People are into this. I never really felt like that held up. And so I don't feel like this weird, ritualistic, dangerous, sexy people with masks prancing around with really sexy old men in chairs. Masks. Like, that stuff's just weird to me.
We did watch The Labyrinth, so.
I actually had that feeling about The Firm.
Yeah, a little bit.
You take I realize he's young, The whole point was to portray this guy right out of college, yeah, right?
Right. Yeah. Naive.
I realize
young.
He's young.
Yeah.
But you've right. got a wife, and someone just made you rich. I mean, really rich. And you go to the beach, and there's a woman, and she's crying, and you end up having sex with her?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's right. weird.
That is right. like any guy over the age of 15 is running away from that situation, yeah. especially Tom Cruise.
I don't know.
Because he can run.
You're right, he can. I don't know, Randy. Randy, have you ever watched the TV series Cheaters?
No.
Okay, basically.
You do realize that's not a reality show, right?
But it's close enough. It's, no, it's like this. It's like this. This is how Cheaters goes down every time. And it hasn't been on for a while, I don't suppose. But it's always some dude who has a fairly attractive girlfriend. He gets to the elevator. Then they send in a supermodel who is, oh my God, so hot and delicious. And then she starts flirting with him. And then, you know, he flirts back a little bit. Then he gets off the elevator, and then he starts getting punched by his wife or girlfriend yeah. because he talked to her. And I'm like, in a real situation, these normal-looking guys, if a model talks to them, he's going to be like, his mind's right. going to be blown.
Yeah, but he's not going to hump her in the elevator, though, necessarily.
Again, you just got made rich, and you're in freaking Jamaica, and you don't right. smell a setup? Seriously?
Yes. No, you don't. He's from stupid.
That, my problem. That's my problem. From that moment on in the movie, I thought he was the dumbest person alive.
He was like, the dumbest person.
That I think that he smelled the setup on the woman in the bar first, and yeah. it was like the
I don't
kind
think
of the,
I like this whole smelling stuff. Go ahead.
But I think it's like the 1-2 punch, right? You distract him over here with this one,
mm-hmm.
and then when he won't be fooled by that. We'll just do this other setup because he's thinking, well, I dodged that bullet. I didn't go for the woman that you know that they were trying to set me up with, and I'll just walk on the beach.
I'm more bothered that it's not so much that he fell for her on the beach or that seemed right. dumb because it did. It all seemed super dumb to me. But what bothered me was later, at the very right. end of the film, the wife. Do they always have to forgive him just because it's Tom Cruise? He's a douche. You shouldn't yeah. forgive. You know what? Right. Help him get through the part while all your lives are threatened, and then leave him because he right. freaking. Not only did he cheat, the way Randy described it, I think is dead on. He cheated real stupidly.
Yes,
right.
Not that there's a good way to cheat. I say don't cheat, but if you're gonna go down there to Jamaica and be that, oh look at this, he's on the beach, yeah, and all in all of a sudden. Super, super dumb.
Hey,
but she took his hand and put it on her boob. Right? Who can say no?
But you know, all right, Jerry.
What's the deal?
The thing that really bothered me that almost gave me the I want to get in a shower after like a crying game moment kind of thing yeah. was when I realized that Wilford Brimley had been eyeballing this the whole time. So he watched an entire yeah. sex scene. Play
yeah.
out.
Yeah. yeah.
I would have ran over by the creek after Wilford Brimley should give me those photos and went.
Yeah. Wilford Brimley is an interesting choice in this movie because I suppose it's to reinforce the old boys club that is that firm.
Yeah.
Because they're right. all in their, you know, 70s still acting like frat boys. But I would have had a, I don't know, younger, more agile dude there. I guess he had he had Jigsaw and Hank to do all his dirty work. But
okay, Hank. Yes, Jigsaw. What's the Jigsaw reference?
The guy played Jigsaw in the Saw movies. He's
that's right. He's yeah. Now I recognize him. Oh, yeah. Tobin Bell, of course.
That guy.
Yes.
He
man.
Wow, he looks crazy different.
His hair is pretty awesome in that mm-hmm. thing.
You know what? Ed yeah. Harrison's head is way too big to be bald.
Ed Harris.
I'm just saying.
Harris.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris and his head.
Oh.
Ed Harris, he really needs to have hair so that you can kind of be fooled.
Well, he's Ed Harris. He has no hair.
I forgot how creepy he is. And there's some creepy people in this movie. Yeah. Gene Hackman, the way they did his hair,
yeah.
he is the creepiest person alive.
Yeah.
How the wife could go down there and seduce him is beyond me. Like I thought,
and not be like throwing up in her mouth a little
right.
bit. Like,
how funny would that have been if, as he was finally passing out due to the drugs, she just puked on him?
Yeah. It's made a little bit worse because he looks like my dad at his age, and and so whenever Gene Hackman plays creepy sex man in a movie, uh-huh. I have a really hard time with it. But when he's like fumbling around like a dope in like Birdcage or. I don't know. Or when he's cool and like Unforgiven.
Sleuther.
yeah, or like French Connection or something, then it's like, oh, okay, that's my dad's cool. But when he's all creepy and sexy stuff, it's like, dude, that's like creepy my dad. Sexy. It's like my
that
dad
hairdo. That hairdo on a man who's successful is BS. That's BS. and I'm gonna give you the ultimate example of that hairdo on a man that I'm just going, no way. With his level of success, he's wearing that hairdo, and that's Gary Oldman in The Contender.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's
There's
a good
no
one.
No. Way.
That's a good
There's
one, no but this way. Is Gene Hackman who is successful and has the same hair in all things. It's never different.
I don't get it. Yeah. I imagine he goes in to get cast for a film and he's got normal good looking hair. And they're like, hey, can you grow it out and kind of curl it like you do in all the movies?
Make it look like pubes. Yeah. Is that possible? Right.
Yeah. Can you do like old man scrotum pubes? That'd be wonderful if
you
could do
really
that.
Can we really emphasize your bald patch?
I think he has a deal like Brown M&M's for Van Halen where he comes in, a writer, and he goes, look, I need top billing, second place at worst, and my hair stays like this.
It's horrible.
Poor old Gene Hackman got
I love Gene Hackman.
The front of the cover art.
I freaking love Gene Hackman, but you're not wrong about his hair. Like in something like the Tannenbaums, it works, right? Because it's weird.
Funny.
It's, yeah, and it's kind of meant to be. And I think it even kind of works as a senator, I don't know what you're doing, and his hair is like 3,000 years old guy in Birdcage. But when he's like super, like, okay, back to Enemy of the State. He shaved his head like buzz cut short. You hardly recognize him in that movie. And he is bad A in it. Totally cool.
He is bad A in that movie.
So cut cut your hair shorter is what I meant to say. Right. Yeah. He's not really working anymore.
We know we haven't even talked about Busey yet. We've been going down the whole cast. We haven't even got to Busey yet.
We haven't talked about anybody.
He's on screen for like a total of 45 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what he does? He does one of the things that I've noticed as a trope, especially since we did it this last episode. Everybody who has a risky job always tapes a gun holster to the bottom of their desk.
Yep. That was my alternate greeting.
Right.
Was it? I was gonna talk about having a job as a guy who installs guns on the underside of desks. Apparently, if you're in a movie with a Sorvino, that's a requirement. Right. I recall our last episode of Film Sack.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. I'm with my partner Brian Dunaway. What the hell? I would love to hear from someone out there who has actually got this. Like, you think this is a good line of defense? Because
I've got one right here. Stupid. You guys don't have. You don't have one taped to the bottom of your podcasting desk?
No,
that sounds like a horrible idea.
I got two.
I've got it pointed the wrong way.
I got two so I can go.
Pointed at your crotch.
You got it pointed for cleaning. It's easy cleaning.
Yeah, exactly.
I have two so I can go akimbo when I yell Julio Iglesias as loud as I can.
Hey, I'll tell you what. If you come in, both these people in the last 2 weeks, Busey and last week it was Sorvino, they both look so uncomfortable when they're reaching for their gun on their desk because it's so inconvenient because you have to essentially squat down and kiss your desk to get to it. Let's just make a list to your left a little bit.
Let's make a list of all the defense mechanisms that would be more appropriate than a gun strapped to the bottom of the desk.
I know.
Trapdoor.
A button. Trapdoor. Trap door, exactly. A trapdoor.
How about a lock on the front door? How about that?
That might work.
A dog, right? Attack dogs would be way more impressive.
Paint cans on bungee cords that automatically swing down and hit them in the face as soon as they open the door.
That's right. My best idea.
So you're going to go Macaulay Culkin. All right.
Keep going. I have a huge revelation to give. Keep going. When you're done with this, I cannot believe what I've just seen. Go ahead.
My best idea is a taser net, and it falls from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hit the button, it falls and it electrifies and it takes out the people who are underneath it.
See, that'd be a good one.
You know, bad. I think I would just go for a much smaller office and just have one of those bulletproof glass windows where everybody has to hand stuff underneath that little slot thing, like at the gas stations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why not? That. All right, look at this. Look at this. Gene Hackman.
Okay.
All right, actor. He hasn't done a movie since 2004. He did Welcome to Mooseport and then said, I'm out.
Oh, I remember Welcome to Mooseport.
Yeah,
I
don't think I saw it, but I remember. It was Ray, right?
He's 84 years old and hasn't worked in about 11 years. He retired, basically. He says, I'm done, I'm out. Which is unfortunate, because I think he could still do stuff. But anyway, here's the point. He is in the most John Grisham movies freaking of actor ever. Yeah. I didn't know that. He's in The Firm. He's in the... where's the other one?
Runaway Jury.
Runaway Jury. He's in the... Is it under suspicion?
No. Pelican Brief.
Pelican Brief, yes.
By the way, that title hurts my feelings.
The Chamber is the other one. He's in The Chamber.
Oh, The Chamber.
This just makes me want to give it all up and go watch Get Shorty again, because that's an amazing movie.
Anyway. Oh, he's great in that, too.
Pelican Brief sounds like tidy whities that peck your nuts.
Yeah. He is not in the Pelican Brief, by the way, has a big bag
that you store fish in underneath. just underneath the sack.
I just want to clear that up. He is not in the Pelican Brief, but he should be. He may as well be.
Oh, I thought he was.
No, you're thinking of probably either Sam Shepard or possibly.
Isn't Pelican Brief the one with Julia Roberts?
Yeah, Julia Roberts and your Denzel Washington. Yes,
right. Yeah, I thought he was okay. Well,
same year as The Firm, by the way. That movie.
I guess. Oh, really?
Weird. Oh. It was all coming up Grisham in the early 90s.
Jeez,
man.
Yeah. Which Grisham movie do you want to see today?
That's insane. All right. So here's some fun trivia for you that we haven't talked about. Holly Hunter is on screen for a total of 5 minutes, 59 seconds. It's one of the shortest performances ever nominated for an Oscar. She was in 20 scenes, an average of 18 seconds per scene. That total amount of time, and she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Pretty intense.
That's funny, because she also the majority had, are... Go ahead.
You go.
Go ahead. No, you. I was just going to talk about the egg sandwich. Go ahead.
And again, that's one of those things. Like, why did they put that in the movie?
Yeah.
He could have totally gotten information from her so easily without having to go through all that rigmarole of that scene. And it starts to feel really bloated. That's the scene where I feel like the movie gets bloated.
Yeah.
I feel like the film is bloated, and I think it could have been even more bloated because there's one scene that required a whole camera crew to go out and take about 5 seconds, not even that long, worth of video footage of the pseudo albino getting off a private jet and running to a car. Wait, I mean, that was the entire shot.
Who? Oh, yeah. The Jigsaw. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so the whole shot was just him getting off a plane and running to a car, and it couldn't have been on screen more than like not even 2 seconds. And I thought, they did not use that airport in any other scenes, so that means they had to send out a camera crew to capture 2 seconds worth of footage.
But it probably had a bunch of briefcases in it, so there's probably some hidden thing about it. That's my thinking. Tom Cruise's character had a brother named Raymond in this. He's also the brother of Raymond in Rain Man, which is an interesting comparison. Charlie Sheen was originally considered for the part of Mitch McDear.
Oh, geez.
And, well, you got to think. I'm thinking 93-ish. He was still kind of platoon guy, you know.
I think he could play that role.
He could have made Wall Street or whatever. He could have probably done it.
I would have liked to see Bill Paxton in this. That would have been good.
Halle Berry auditioned but didn't get the young role of the woman on the beach who seduces Mitch, so it was almost her.
Oh.
And there you go. By the way, let's do a little trivia. You guys like trivia, don't you?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes, hate it.
I know. Hold on, I got some music for it. How about this?
Put some piano. Put some piano on. You got some piano?
I got a little Spanish flea. That'll work. All right, here's the question. Everyone, without looking, Best Picture 1993, what won?
Oh.
93.
Jurassic Park.
All right, you said Dance with the Wolves, Randy.
Gosh, Dances with Wolves was like 5 years before that. and true. I think Jurassic Park was the year before that.
Hey, smart guy, what is it?
I don't know.
You can't look it up. Can't look it up.
I'm not looking it up.
It wasn't The Firm, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I know it wasn't The Firm. 93. Oh, I give.
All right. It was Schindler's List, Steven Spielberg.
He also
won for Best Director that year.
Oh, my gosh.
Best Actor. I'll tell you who your options. No, that'll give it away.
No.
Yeah, Best
Actor. Now that you've put us in the right year.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Best Actor.
Morgan Freeman.
All right, that's Brian's. we'll find out in a moment.
It doesn't always have to be right. It just has to be entertaining.
I remember when I won that award that year.
Yeah.
Hey, the Morgan Freeman Award, you get that in this movie?
Yeah.
Now, are we talking about... Was it
Clint Eastwood for... No.
I'll put you down for Eastwood, if you want.
You put me down for Eastwood.
Okay.
What I'm thinking, Unforgiven was like a few years after this, though. So I don't know what he would have been in for.
Who cares? It's a good guess.
What do you say, Randy?
Al Pacino.
All right. You were all incorrect. It was Tom Hanks and the other nominations for Philadelphia. Yep. Oh, and your nominations for that year were him, Daniel Day-Lewis for In the Name of the Father, Lawrence Fishburne for What's Love Got to Do with It, And Anthony Hopkins for The Remains of the Day, and Liam Neeson for Schindler's List. Okay, final category.
Okay, all right.
Best act. Oh, I already gave this away.
I'm going to say Tom Hanks.
Yeah, right. You already.
I'm going with Tom Hanks.
You already said Holly Hunter won for The Piano.
I'll give you another one. Okay, they didn't
best
do
director.
That. I think I already told you Spielberg.
Oh, right. Well, yeah.
Okay, right. We'll do a weird one here. Best supporting actor. Yeah, that's a fun one.
Well, Gene Hackman gets my vote because he
I remember this. You actually just gave the biggest clue possible because you said that The Fugitive was up for Best Picture, and I remember Tom.
Oh,
you're correct. Yeah. Tommy Lee Jones won. He was up against Leonardo DiCaprio in Who Ate Gilbert's Grape? Give It Back Now. Ralph Fiennes for Schindler's List.
Ralph.
John Malkovich for In the Line of Fire is Mitch Leary. Remember that? That was great. Although that wasn't a bad pick to say Eastwood, because he was in that movie. Anyway, and then Pete Postlethwaite for In the Name of the Father.
Postlethwaite.
I do too.
Rest in peace,
I'm sad when he died, yeah. It wasn't that long ago, was it? 2011, yeah, it wasn't very long ago.
No, I just found out Taylor Negron died.
Who's Taylor Negron?
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, you totally know him.
I just found out too.
Yeah, if you look at a picture of him, you'll be like, oh, that guy. And I'm trying to think, like, he's the pizza delivery guy in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Gosh, I'm trying to think. We've seen him on Film Sack.
Oh, that guy.
He was in Nothing But Trouble.
Oh, that's sad. He did just die.
Boy Scout.
Yeah, he's in tons of things.
Yeah.
Oh, what'd he die from? He's bald in some shots. Did he have cancer? Let's see. Yeah, he looks real sick and bald. He must have had a big fight with cancer or something.
Oh, really?
That's too bad, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we like that. And you're right. He's a Film Sack regular, this dude.
We were talking about him a few weeks ago playing some crazy role. What was it?
It was something.
He
was a bad guy.
I give up. I
That's what he was. Fausto Squirinzu in Nothing But Trouble.
Was
That's
he?
That's right.
Yes.
No, he was.
He was the aforementioned Squirini.
He was the Squirini guy.
He was the jerk.
Squirini. Yeah,
from Brazil.
Yeah, that's the guy. Oh, man. Well, rest in peace. He had a bad fight with cancer, it says here. And he was only 57. That sucks. Dude, cancer, F off.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. What else? Oh, this movie had a hell of a montage in it. That was pretty good. Didn't expect it, but there it was. Tom Cruise backflipping in the middle of town there in Memphis. That was stupid.
What the hell?
Yeah.
I hate you, The Firm, for that. Seriously. I just started hating the movie when I'm suddenly looking at a guy who's a stunt guy and doesn't look anything like Tom Cruise doing all these backflips down the street.
I didn't like that.
You know, I didn't like that scene at first because it really got on my nerves. But later on, when his carefree life was falling around him, and he went back to the same street, and that kid's all black. You know, he's doing all that backflips and stuff. And then we see, you know, it's
Did you
it
say
just
that
got
kid
real.
Was all black, or that kid was what? I
no, he's doing
wrong.
Backflips.
Okay, I thought you said he was all black and he was doing backflips.
But that has nothing to do with what I was talking about. He was doing backflips and stuff.
I thought that's what you said. Sorry, go
ahead. Yeah, I'm going to point out that the kid was black.
Hey, this kid?
By the way, he was flipping, and he was black!
Let me lend some credibility to the scene. He was black. Anyway, sorry. Continue. You were saying.
Oh, but I just thought it was a good, I thought it was, you know, that he was so carefree before, and now things are real, and he's like, I ain't got time for you, kid.
Yeah.
I ain't got time for you. Things just got real. I just grew up.
Yeah. Here's one for you. Dude in the other room who you can't see, and he's talking the whole time, and you've decided to go ahead and go through secret stuff while you're having this conversation with him in the other room and build this weird tension. I hate scenes like that.
You hated that? I actually liked the tension about it.
I always hate it. I don't like it in this. I don't like it in anything because two things. I think it's too easy, number one. It's just an easy thing to do in your movie. But also, secondly, it does create tension, and it makes me nervous and frustrated. I hate it. I hate that feeling of like, oh, any second now he's going to get up and put his other shoe on and see you out of the corner of his eye. Like, I can't deal with it. Like, how much artificial conversation can you get Gene Hackman to have across the house before you've had enough time to go through a thing and drop your beer and step on your sugar glass beer? There's no way that would have broken. Anyway,
speaking of Gene Hackman, he was the
subject. Those red stripe bottles are really flimsy.
Go ahead, Randy.
Gene Hackman was the subject of the worst trope in the movie for me.
Oh, yeah? Hold on. I got a worst trope. Hold on, Eric. All right, you guys. I'm warning you now. Before I give you the worst trope ever, okay, before Randy tells you what it is, before I play the clip that says, hey, there's going to be a trope to talk about, I want to talk about our friends at Texas Beard Company at texasbeard.com, okay? Just for a second now. I've warned you. I'm in here. This isn't me stealth advertising. This is me talking about a sponsor who we really like, but doing it because I'm letting you know ahead of time, all right? You haven't heard the next thing yet. Don't worry, it's coming. You'll get to that in a second. But man, TexasBeard.com, you're a guy. Some of you are girls, okay? And I wish I were you because I don't want to shave at all. But as it turns out, dudes, we get a lot of hair on our face. It's a hormonal thing. It's the way we're built. How do we take care of our fabulous beards, be it a goatee or something a little more rugged or something longer or whatever? If I'm going nice little short little, like a little evil mustache, or if I'm going like full Gandalf, one direction or the other, I need a place like Texas Beard to take care of me. All of the beard care products you can handle for wonderful, great prices. And don't forget, if you spend over $25 anywhere in the States, shipping is free. Why don't you go to TexasBeard.com and use the code FilmSack. Let's give you a discount. Let's give you a break. That's at TexasBeard.com. Check them out. We love them. TexasBeard.com. .com.
All right, what do you got? In the like he's been a part of this horrible crew of criminals for his entire professional career, and when push comes to shove and he wakes up from being drugged and he's in the worst position he's ever been in his life, he's suddenly going to go straight and help the person who drugged him get away? Mm. No. He's not
buying it.
He showed signs of being beaten when he was like the night before when was kind of coming clean with her.
No. I'm just saying, Tiger doesn't change his stripes like that, and they do it in movies all the time. The only way you ultimately win as a good guy is to have one of the many bad guys turn, and it was stupid. So I didn't believe
it. Old lady Triplehorn is
liked her.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. It didn't bother me like Randy. I think because I think that I think he knew that his time was up, and he was just kind of going through the motions, and it was just, you know, it was just time for him to exit.
Yeah, well, yeah. But do you feel like he had, do you feel like it was a, you don't feel like it was like a good character turn? Like he didn't suddenly find the light and had his last minute redemption.
He hated himself. And they made that evident by the conversation he had with Abby about, you know, why would she even want to be with him? And he was just going through the motions, and he was trying to find happiness but couldn't find any. And so he was already teetering on depression and being suicidal to begin with. So I think this was kind of his way of becoming something better. So it was kind of like a turn. I thought it was okay. It didn't bother me like
that. It's a little cheap, is all.
Yeah, well, this whole movie is, you know, is, come on. I mean, Tom Cruise busts out of a window and conveniently lands on a truck full of fluffy,
cotton thing. He saw that earlier when he was coming in.
Like, what the hell is that cotton truck doing?
They were delivering cotton to law firms. What the
That was weird. That was weird.
Law firms don't need cotton all of a sudden?
Right, I didn't say they didn't set it up. I'm just saying it's ridiculous.
Well, it was awfully convenient. Sure.
Right, sure. Right. Why not? Mean,
and Gene Hackman talked about an hour and a half about you can't fly and dive in the same 24 hours. I'm like, gee, I wonder if that's going to come back up. Mm. Gee, he's only said it 12 times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So some of that's a little convenient.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. How about this one? I got one for you here. Hold on. There's always a tour going on during a cat and chase scene.
Yeah.
If you follow me over here, these ships were brought in by the iron. It's like, dude, it's always the cover for some high-speed foot chase.
It really made me miss Jen Hooks.
I know, right?
Totally. Do you ever feel like you ever wonder if those actors, you ever think they ever get forget that they're trying to hide and just kind of get really swept up into the tour? You think that ever happens?
I doubt it. They got real interested and go, oh, that painting. Yeah. You know, that is an interesting painting. Right. Yeah, I doubt it. I wish they would, but I doubt it.
Tom Cruise could not hide for his life. No wonder he's so good at running, because in that whole series, I mean,
well, another trope. He's the sweaty guy in the rafters who's he's giving away his location because he's dripping sweat.
He's drippy sweat. He is greasy this whole movie.
Yeah.
The whole movie, he's
greasy. Is it bad that I laughed when Hank got a limp and then limped for most of the movie?
Not at all.
And then, I mean, because it was so Hank in the first place.
He's the squat guy. That's what he's credited with in the film, too.
Yeah, the squat guy with no...
Squat man.
With zero dialogue. And then when he got kicked in the leg again, I just laughed. I was just like, that poor guy with his gunshot. And then I kept thinking of Hank in Breaking Bad, always limping. And and then I got to thinking, I think that's our third Hank role, I think, in the history of film sack. Which isn't bad, considering his career was kind of just not even there yet in 93. Yet we've seen him in three things. We saw him in, that one. His deal was like he was it was the one. It was the one.
Right.
Oh yeah, the
right.
Jet Li.
Do I have that right? Jet Li.
Where he kept
the one. Jet Li. Guarla Gagirga. Okay, here it is. Please be right, Scott. Please be right. I'm gonna be irritated if this is Dean Norris. He's Sergeant Spiegel.
I like Spiegel.
Scott's gotten a little caffeinated.
Hey, you know what? There's another trope I got.
Oh, what? Hold on. Here.
Muskrat.
Five. All right.
Hey, you know what? If you see a movie in a fax machine, it's either going to be spewing out important documents that either go unnoticed or roll away.
Yeah.
Right. I love
fax
that,
machines
though,
are the worst.
Because, I mean, that's not some special effects trickery. That was rolled out of there, curled up, and went right under the desk.
Those are the thermal ones, right?
The curviest paper we can get.
That was the thermal stuff. That's back when that's all fax machines would work, and then they eventually got real paper for, laser and stuff. But
Because of that kind of crap.
Yeah.
By the way, five film sec movies for Dean Norris.
Before this one. This is the sixth.
Wow.
Sixth, right.
What are the other five?
Lawnmower Man.
Okay.
Starship Troopers.
All right.
Lethal Weapon 2.
Got it.
The One, and Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Oh, Judgment Day. Wait, who was he?
SWAT team leader.
Oh, right. He was there just kind of barely. Did we do T2? We did Terminator 2, did we?
It was an early one, I think.
Yeah. No. We just did it a year ago.
Really? Is that it?
Just a year ago.
Yep. I'm having a weird... Right.
Okay.
Weird.
Yeah, I remember all the furlong stuff that we were talking about.
I guess so.
And playing the scene in the arcade. Nah, he was here a minute ago.
Oh, I know what it was. I only got the first half to stream. That's what it was. So I felt like I never quite finished that movie. We talked about it on the episode. Wow. I missed a huge chunk of it. But, you know, it's Terminator. You remember all of it.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so it wasn't a big deal, but yeah, that's why. That right there is why. What else?
Hey, do you guys love the moments in movies where the hero receives a phone call and the phone call is like super excited because they're telling him to get out of there? It's kind of like that Matrix moment with Neo, like when they get the phone call.
Mm-hmm. He's in the hallway and Walrus Man's walking down the thing to come talk to him, and he's got Hal Holbrook all ready to take him in that office.
Oh, right.
I mean,
do you think they were going to kill him in there? Like, what do you think they were going to do?
Yeah, I think so.
Last time they gave him a party, so I don't know. It was kind of a little bit of misdirection.
Had his angry face on.
Yeah,
there were so many angry faces in this movie. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe. I mean, everybody's seen Tom Cruise's.
Paul Sorvino either.
Yeah, that guy.
Everybody's seen Tom Cruise's angry face, and Gene Hackman's angry face isn't much to speak of. But my gosh, Wilford Brimley, for a tub of goo, he looks scary.
Yeah, he does. He totally does.
I'd never say it to his face.
Paul Sorvino, man, that was the look that boys must have gotten when they came over to pick up Mira to go out.
Yeah, dude. You have her on by midnight, see?
wasn't even talking. Just like the stare. Like, hi, Mr. Sorvino. I'm here to pick up Mira.
Okay. And did anybody really like how Tom Cruise's character, Mitch, found a third way out? Like,
no,
you know, like they basically he gets set up, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's either going to lose everything or he's going to have to go to jail. Like, it's one or the other.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
He finds a way out by
joining ZZ Top. Yeah.
Pretending that he's on the side of the mob to the mob.
Yeah.
So that they drop their guard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was that's unsatisfying to me.
It was a stone too far. Bridge too far.
I think he walks into that mob office and they just drop him out the window.
Right. He doesn't even get a chance to speak.
Well, it's because
I am Mitch.
I'm your lawyer.
Well, it's because the Porkins scruffy looking one kept telling Sorvino to calm down and sit down and listen, hear the kid out. And
I think that guy was on The Sopranos too.
He might.
Yeah.
He
any fat nose Italian, I think would have been in this. It's like, we need a fat nose Italian.
Yeah.
And it's the same guys who play it's the same guy who plays in every mafia.
You don't
movie,
think he, so in Italian? Well, man, you're kind of not wrong on The Sopranos. Every mob dude in there had a fat nose. Right, now that I think about it, even the young guy had a fat nose.
I don't know why that is. I don't know why visually that's a stereotype that we like to see in our actors.
We want
to
it.
Play that. I don't know.
We desire
guy
it.
Looks like a potato.
Right? No, doesn't he though? Like a potato with a like an anthropomorphic potato. That's
look
what
look
it looks like.
I'm putting Skype right here. I mean, this is IMDb page.
By the way, I'm going to backtrack a little bit to make sure that everybody understands. When I say fat nose Italian, I'm not saying that all Italians have fat noses. I'm saying that that seems to be what they're looking for
yeah.
in movies.
Yeah, I think the casting. You know what? If you want to see some truly. It's hard to call
Italians
it racism.
Attractive
but it,
people.
If you, I'm not going to call it racism, but if you want to see some truly straight up like profiling happening in modern day society on the regular and up front and out in the open, look at any kind of casting stuff from casting directors or casting calls. I have a friend who does some casting in LA, and he's like, oh yeah, we're looking for stereotypes constantly.
Oh yeah,
because we're not interested in an Italian guy who doesn't look like an Italian guy.
Right, and you have to. I mean, because you know why? Because it's a visual medium, and just like when Tom Cruise runs, he's not running because that's the fastest way to run. He's running the way he runs because it looks like the fastest. The way he runs is actually very inefficient.
Did you guys notice the scene where he goes up the down escalator?
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
great.
Down the up escalator?
Yeah, that was great.
Oh my God.
That was great.
What
he's
are you
waving
doing?
His arms.
Well, yeah. He went up there, went so down funny. There. And then, you know what? I wasn't supposed to laugh at that, and I did. And I also wasn't supposed to laugh when he finally peeled out of that office when he realized that he was getting into Hal Holbrook's office to be offed. Yeah. And he just suddenly ran. It was like a Monty Python moment.
It was a goofy, like, slapsticky panic run.
Yeah.
Like,
I would say second worst run, second only to Steven Seagal. Yeah. Steven Seagal is still worst run.
Steven Seagal's got a pretty nice. He puts those fingers straight out so to break the wind is. You know, as most efficiently as possible.
He likes to break the wind very efficiently. I know that about him.
So Joe Vitarelli would have been on The Sopranos. Unfortunately, he died in 2004. But if he would have not died in 2004, I'm sure he would have been on the.
It's virtual guarantee that guy would have been on there. Everybody was on there. Robert Loggia was on there 2 seconds before he died. I swear, that guy. And by the way, you know, you see something. There's still moments in your life where your childhood innocence is chipped away. And for me, it happens in strange places, usually in a movie or a TV show or something like that. But the most recent for me was watching The Sopranos, and Robert Loggia, who's like usually in these, at least late career, he's just Mr. Nice Guy, and I'm a grandpa, and I don't understand, or you know, he's not playing a rough dude. He shows up on The Sopranos and goes completely the opposite. It's like Tony Danza in that Long John movie or whatever that is that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. It's called Don John. That's it.
Don John.
He just throws you off like, whoa, Tony Danza, what are you doing? And that Robert Loggia character, I mean, he was a brutal mother effer. Mm-hmm. And it completely altered how I see that guy. So now I can't go back to like a 80s business comedy and have him banter with Steve Martin and not go, that guy is a total dick.
80s business comedy.
He's a good actor.
I want to watch all of those.
He's a good actor.
We really captured some imaginations a couple weeks ago with the discussion about actors that, because of the roles they've played, you can't forgive them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
And I can totally forgive Robert Loggia because he made a Bonnie Hunt movie called Return to Me, and he was amazing.
That was a
and
great
he was
movie.
Wonderful.
Oh, I remember that movie. That's
it's a great movie. Whatever happened to Holly Hunt? Bonnie Hunt.
She had a TV show for a while, didn't she? And then she just kind of.
She's the voice of the Porsche on those car movies. Cars movie.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. I remember.
She's got that.
Cars.
She was the
those car movies. They're just called Cars.
You know those car movies.
Wasn't there a Cars movie called something?
I think it was Vehicles. What was it?
Yeah, Vehicle. Disney Pixar's Vehicles. That was it.
No, but you're right. Bonnie Hunt has kind of dropped off the radar.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. She's funny and interesting.
Yeah.
And
oh yeah, she was great.
I know she often played either the wacky mom or the wacky
sister.
Yeah,
didn't she
play
like the sister in
Cheaper by the Dozen?
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, Jerry Maguire. Oh, that's right. She was the advice-filled sister, and then she was often like a wacky roommate. But now she's playing a car. So there you go.
As a writer director, I feel like her work on Return to Me was stellar.
Mm. Oh, she wrote and directed that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that. New respect. You can be a car all you want.
For some reason, I watched the extras on the DVD.
Did you?
Did you really? You had the, first of all, you had the DVD. Oh, you're talking about the other movie.
Return to Me. That.
Okay, I got
yeah,
you.
Not The Firm.
All right, right, right. I got sidetracked there for a minute.
Nobody has The Firm.
I can't imagine after 2.5 hours of The Firm that I could have watched any one more minute of anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a little
hey,
long.
You know what I want to see? More features. Maybe some stuff they cut.
Yeah. I'm not even a problem. I don't have that many problems with long movies. I just didn't think this, maybe it's just time hasn't been kind to it, you know, the 20 years or whatever, but it just right. didn't, I just didn't think it needed to be that long. It felt weird.
You know what it is, Scott? There are movies where when you got to go use the bathroom, you don't pause the movie. Yeah. This was one of them.
Yeah. Oh. When'd you go? Do you know? What scene was it?
Probably the second time they went to Jamaica. I was really uninterested in whatever was going on in Jamaica. Yeah. Really uninterested.
Well, mostly, so interested you realize your bladder was hurting.
Old people in Hawaiian shirts dancing is all that happened in Jamaica, and it was boring.
Really uncomfortable, awkward dancing.
Oh my gosh, Gene Hackman. He's lucky he made it to Mooseport, dude. That was really embarrassing.
Have a Havana Club? Want to drink one of those? Have a Havana Club.
Exactly. He was about to do Unforgiven, which is one of his finest roles. And we can forgive
yeah.
him for that. So good in that. I want to go watch that right now. I love that movie so much. All right. It's time for the checklist. No, it's not. It's time for the clips. I apologize. Okay. Clips, right. Everybody. Clips. Here's how things kind of get started with a something. Here you go.
These are nice people. Okay, I'm more impressed with it than you are. You grew up with it. Do you know what $96,000 a year is here? It's like $150,000 in New York. Did you ever think I'd make a six-figure salary?
Absolutely.
Well, geez, welcome to 93, dude. I guess inflation did happen. So
right.
150K in New York. That, I don't think you can do that now. Can you?
It won't get you nowhere.
No. I think you live in a hovel if you do that. You got to have like, right. What's that housing? If you're an old person that rented it in the 40s, you can stay in there forever and they never get the rent rake and they hope you die soon so they can crank the rent up. What's that
yeah,
called?
Like they did in Friends.
Something
yeah,
called something. Yeah, oh, like
rent control.
Rent control. Yeah, that's the
rent control.
Nobody lives
that was
on
my band name.
No one lives on 150K in New York. All right, how about these are nice people?
These are nice people.
I'm just going to keep that around.
These are nice people.
All right, I hated the music. Here's some. Now, there were actually people doing things behind all that. You just couldn't hear it because for whatever reason, the mix was all jacked.
But that theme, that was so ubiquitous in this movie.
Yeah.
I don't understand how they couldn't come up with a different theme to put on something.
I liked the discordant stuff when things were tense. Like, that was right. pretty good. Mm-hmm. But to go from to that, it's just weird.
Scott Joplin.
It's weird. Is that who that is? I don't even know who that is. Is that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, good for him. Gene, let's meet Gene Hackman. Here you go.
What about you? What led you to law school?
So far back, I don't think I can remember.
Sure you can, counselor.
I used to caddy for young lawyers, often work on weekdays.
Mm, that's right.
Yeah. Right. I'm allowed certain transgressions.
Here's an angry fight.
I never asked for anything, Mitch, except for us to be together.
But I want to give it to you. I want to give you everything you gave up to marry.
Stop it.
Stop it.
Stop it.
Stop it.
You did get the typical, you know, Tom Cruise yelling during an argument where nobody else is yelling.
Mm-hmm. Right, like right. Why did you just take it there? Why are you right. yelling?
The you can't handle the truth voice.
Exactly, yeah. Right. The, no, it's not about rich or poor.
Yeah. It's a very weird high voice.
Mm-hmm. It is squeaky.
Yeah, and it's only his. No one else sounds like that.
It's true.
Here's Holly Hunter.
Ever plug one of these in, only you forgot to put the water in.
No.
You know what happens?
No.
The lights go out. He's been dying to see you since you called.
That's what I saw.
Eddie!
Mr. Lomax will see you now.
I want me a baby, hi!
What? Sorry.
Speaking of uncomfortable white person dancing scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was weird. All right, Gary Busey takes the stage.
I practically went to law school with you. Ray talked about you every stinking day for 3 years. I was his cellmate, he must have told you. Yes. Did he tell you, by the way, it was statutory rape? She was 17, looked 25. I got 1-4.
That's too much math for me to do.
I couldn't. What?
I wish that was all improv. Like
he sounds so excited that he memorized his lines.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he finally pulled it off, man.
Yeah.
That's you Gary can say Busey. What you want to about Busey. He's entertaining.
I love Busey. Oh, are you yeah. kidding me? Yeah. Every movie should have him in it.
I wouldn't want to be stuck in an elevator with him. But
no. Right. I love the Fire TV stick commercials he does. Those,
yeah, those are great. Way Amazon. To go, Amazon. I would, okay, let me modify, Brian, what he just said. I would take an elevator with Busey. I do not want to get stuck on one, though, with him.
Oh, yeah, that'd be horrible.
But going up, like, a few floors? Hey, I really like your work. Yeah, man, it's because your endocrine system getting ripped out or whatever he's going to say. And that's great, but just don't go, boop, oh, no, we're stuck.
I was doing Point Break with Keanu Reeves.
He pulls the fire stop.
Reeves. There was so speaking, by the way, did I ever tell you I had to French kiss Holly Hunter?
So this is our fourth Gary Busey movie.
She tastes like catnip.
And yeah. I happened to listen to our episode for Drop Zone this week.
Oh, and some Wesley Snipes action.
Yeah, and I was amazed at how much we liked Gary Busey then. And hearing how we're treating Gary Busey now, I think, you know, for someone who sucks, we really like him.
Yeah, we love him.
Yeah,
like him.
Yeah.
He's the what suck is, you love. I don't know how you get around it. He's Shatner level. I don't. It's something else. I don't know how you describe it.
Shatner. But, that's a good comparison.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want him in my next Star Wars movie, but I will see a movie with Gary Busey. Like, sure. He will. You know, having him in your movie takes you out of the movie because it's like, oh, it's Gary Busey. He's crazy.
Yeah. It's the Gary Busey show. It really is.
Yeah. Okay. Right, really all right. All right. I want to go around the table. Okay. Name the actor, the one actor that you think sucks and couldn't possibly do a good job, but you'd cast him in your movie every time.
Besides Busey. So
that's tough because you just took away my ace card there with Busey. That's.
I might go that way with, but he sucks though, right? That's the hard bit.
Yeah, I got a good one for this.
Let me think about that for a minute.
Armageddon. Armageddon. He's on everything. Con Air. Apple? No.
Oh.
Ugly Boy.
Oh, yes. Dude, what? You think he sucks? You're thinking of you're talking
Buscemi.
About
Buscemi.
Buscemi. He doesn't Buscemi. Suck. He's great.
Yeah, he's a really good actor.
Yeah, he's a good actor. No, I mean, he's weird.
He is very shoehorned into this one particular role. Like he's stuck. Hard, he's really tight, but
Stephen Baldwin.
Interesting.
Wait, is he the one that says he's the one where he has the one good movie, the
Usual Suspects?
Okay, then, yeah, I think I would
everything
put,
else is Biodome.
I'd put him in, sure.
Yeah,
I'd put him in. I'd do that. Who? Wait,
it's hard to pick somebody and say he outright sucks. I mean, there's people that I think don't necessarily suck, but they are so unique that putting them in your movie, you know, basically would take people out of the movie saying, oh, that's so-and-so.
Oh, Clint Howard is my answer. Clint Howard.
Do you think you could ever allow Pauly Shore back into our movies again?
Yeah.
You think, is that possible?
I'm ready for it. Yeah.
Are you ready for the Shoremageddon or the Shorepocalypse?
The Shore, the Shorepocalypse. I like that.
The Pauly Renaissance.
The Renopoly.
So my answer for worst actor imaginable that I would put in my movie every time, because and I can't explain why. I'm not even going to try to explain why. And we've never seen him in a film sack movie, and that's Charlie Sheen.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why.
I can't stand
it. It might just be the thing he did in Ferris Bueller. I don't know. Mm. But I just have this feeling like I could trust that guy.
Really?
Which is crazy.
It's the for me, he's the anti of this. I hate him. I can't stand him.
He's got such confidence, I think, that he makes you feel...
Is that confidence?
It's okay.
Is that drugs? Is it drugs?
Probably.
Okay.
Drugs and confidence.
All right. His brother, I'd bring Emilio in.
We've seen 4 Emilio Estevez movies on FilmSack.
Yeah. Yeah, we have.
God, when is The Wraith going to be streaming?
Did we not watch that already?
You said that in such a longing way, Ibbet.
I am so longing. It's, you know, Charlie Sheen as a ghostly apparition who drives a car. And
Wraith.
And Randy Quaid, Sherilyn Fenn.
I'm in.
Nick Cassavetes.
Yeah. I love him. He's great.
It's a good movie.
He got a neck wound in Face Off. Remember him bleeding all over the place? That was Nick Cassavetes.
Scott called for Clint Howard. He's in that movie.
Is he?
Yeah.
The thing is, it's almost cheaty because everyone already does this with Clint Howard. It's not like it would be a new thing if I started putting him in everything because he does kind of suck, but he is this. He's in everything. Like if you're a pal with him, he'll show up in your movie.
Ooh, Jeffrey Combs.
Oh, I'm changing my answer to Jeffrey Combs. That's good.
I'm always changing my answer.
But this is a guy who still hasn't seen Deadwood, and that may change how you feel about Jeffrey Combs.
Really?
Oh, no, no, no. Jeffrey Combs. I'm thinking the wrong guy. I'm thinking of Jeffrey. I'm thinking of Ferris Bueller's principal. Who am I thinking of?
Oh, Jeffrey Jones.
Jeffrey Jones. Sorry. Never mind. Back that truck up.
Jeffrey Combs was like eight people
in Star Trek Nine.
Or Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. You're the reanimator guy.
That reanimator.
Guy.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know that we think of him. I guess we do think of him as a pretty crappy actor.
He's a crappy actor.
It's a good actor.
He's not.
Actor.
He's really interesting, but he's not. Well, that's what we're looking for here, right? He's compelling, yes. But terrible. And that's Busey. That's Combs. That's a great one. Brian, you win the tag. You win.
Okay. And so you just mentioned Randy Quaid. And I can't help thinking that one of these days, he's just going to get his sanity and he's going to become Bruce Dern.
Oh,
I just can't
awesome.
Help feeling.
He doesn't obviously mean literally becomes Bruce Dern. But
no, but I mean, he's going to make a movie where he's an old man.
In Canada.
And play the role straight, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody's going to love Randy Quaid again.
And they're going to be blown away by his performance, and they can't believe he was gone so long, and he'll have a big story about how he's got so many new ideas. Yeah, I see this.
I've never not loved Randy Quaid, though.
I like him, too.
When have I ever stopped loving him?
I like him, too, but you can't... It's hard to argue that he's good, because he's not very good. He's kind of the same dude in everything.
We saw Independence Day, we know.
Yeah, well, we didn't. We keep saying... Oh, no, we did see that one. You're right. I was thinking Armageddon again. You know how we confuse Armageddon? I don't know what I'm saying. Here's Busey again.
Don't you knock.
All right, there you go. That's it on that.
Don't you knock.
I'm going to play
there
that
There you go. I think you've pretty much gotten every line he had in this movie.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh, no. Actually, the most important one. Here it is. Brace yourselves. Here we go.
His name was Julio Iglesias. Iglesias.
Oh, that was so good.
So epic. That's getting play on all the shows. I love that line. All right. Oh, here's Walrus Man.
Hi there, Mitch. Bill DeVash, your firm security. Mr. Locke and Mr. Lambert were telling me about your little run-in with the FBI. I wonder if we could have a little talk.
That's not ominous. That's not scary.
Yeah, not at all.
Why don't you do your...
And then he says this will just take a minute and proceeds to take hours.
No, it took forever. And it got uncomfortable, like when he said these words.
Kind of intimate acts, oral and whatnot.
Oral and whatnot. That's awesome.
Best line.
It might be. Everybody oral on Twitter was repeating that. Like I said,
I want a t-shirt for sure.
I put up a picture of him. I said, there's old diabetes. And everybody wrote back oral and whatnot. So it must be kind of famous. That was a treat. All right. Here's your some salty language. All right. So here you go.
How did you find that out?
What do you think I am here? A night watchman?
I get confused sometimes.
Well, don't.
He's great, dude. An effing night watchman. I just want to go back to Hurricane Utah and run my ranch.
And eat candy bars all day. That'll never catch up with me.
Here's a shorty one.
I get paid to be suspicious when I got nothing to be suspicious about.
It just occurred to me what you were getting at.
Get out of here, circle logic jerk.
I'm going to eat nothing but... What'd you say? He was going to say...
Come back and eat nothing but... candy bars all day.
He said something else though, like a certain kind of candy bar, and it made me laugh. Peanut
Snickers?
No.
Peanut M&Ms?
No, he said something else. What are the ones?
Good and Plenty? No.
What was it?
I don't know.
Made Snickers? Me laugh. All right, here's Ed Harris getting all pissed.
You've got no rights. Your life is mine. I could kick your teeth down your throat, yank them out your asshole. I'm not even violating your civil rights.
Jeez.
Wow.
Guy went on to make Pollock.
I'm angry. Jeez. Calm down, Ed Harris.
Another guy, that was another big chipping away of my innocence. The first role I ever saw Ed Harris in was as John Glenn in The Right Stuff.
At
the time I thought, man, what a Boy Scout he is. He will never play anything but the Boy Scout. And every other role he plays is either weird, dirty, dark, something.
Oh, he was great in The Abyss.
True.
Loved him in The Abyss.
True, but The Abyss was scary because he had to breathe in all that water air stuff. And that freaked me out.
Oh, yeah.
That freaked me out. I didn't like that.
I loved him in The Truman Show. I mean, he was such a...
Uh-huh. No, he's amazing in it. But that's my whole point. None of them were like John Glenn. You know? Like, I bought into that whole, our astronauts are only the finest of men. Like, that whole thing. I bought into that.
Did you guys catch the trope of the own goal in this?
The own goal?
Yeah.
What is that?
Give me a trope alert.
Okay.
Musgrove.
Whoop, wrong one. What?
Wilford Brimley scores an own goal. Thank goodness, or it would have all gone wrong. When he comes up, he's got his gun drawn. He's chasing Tom Cruise, and the only real bad guy that you're ever aware of in the movie, the Nordic Man, is actually on the other side of a
door with a silhouette.
Oh, that's
once again, briefcase comes into play. Silhouette of a man carrying a briefcase. Right. Got to be a lawyer.
That must be Tom Cruise. He's carrying a briefcase.
I love when he beat the hell out of the guy with the briefcase.
So wait, what's the own goal? What's the origin of that term?
In sports, when you score for the other team,
his own goal.
Own goal. I thought it was some French word or something.
Gotcha. Own goal.
Okay. Like you got home
goal.
You turned around in basketball and shot in your own basket. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. I
like
that one.
It was beautiful. That was my favorite scene in the movie right there.
All right. Well, here's another clip.
What makes you think I need marital advice?
Okay. You give me marital advice.
Okay. Now, I just want to, I've pulled out the last part and I want you to tell me if this is one of those moments that we've caught where they probably should have done another take because he kind of flubbed up the words a little bit. And because it's Gene Hackman, they said, no, go ahead and cut it. We're fine. Here it is again. Just listen close.
You give me marital advice.
There's something wrong with the way he said
it. You give me marital advice.
You give me marital advice.
I pronounce things clearly.
Then they went, cut. It's fine. Okay. Move on. Like, they just let it go.
They're repeating the same words. I mean,
you give me marital advice.
Cut.
Maybe he was quoting The Sound of Music, and that was Edelweiss.
You give me Edelweiss advice.
That's a good idea. All right, here's the moment we've all been waiting for. It's like, what's his name in Transformers? Here you go.
No!
Ed Harris doing a...
Meanwhile, what sounds like
in the background, it looks like Dolly Parton's about to kick in. Listen.
No!
He was using the phone at Pete's dueling piano bar.
That's good. All right. Here's final thing. It's a little bit of odd music again. Some weird music. That was like an intense part, and they were getting all like, you expect John Candy to show up. And
right. Suddenly, we're in New Orleans. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they actually used that music in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It showed up in there. All right.
Yeah, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
It's time for this checklist now. The Film Sack checklist as it applies to The Firm. Way too long. Check. Not short. Check. Tom Cruise running like a wild man. I didn't say white man. Wild man. Check.
Whatever, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm all racist now. Look at this here. Star Trek stuff. Paul Sorvino. He played Tommy Morolodo, or however you said it in the movie. He on TNG played Nikolai Roshenko, the father or foster brother, rather, of Worf.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's one of the best film Trek connections we've ever had.
I agree. Keith Campbell, stunt double for Tom Cruise in Enterprise, performed stunts in several episodes. And then finally, Jerry Harden. Oh, that came out almost wrong. It's still coming out wrong. Jerry Harden played Royce McKnight on TNG, played a dude in When the Bow Breaks. I can't read anything today. TNG played Samuel Clemens as Mark Twain in the episode Time Zero and Time Zero Part 2. Weird.
That was a really good.
That's who the other old guy is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Jerry Harden. Yeah.
Look at the irony there. You got the guy who plays Samuel Clemens in Star Trek hanging around with the guy who does a one-man show about Samuel Clemens his entire life.
Whoa.
The other guy. That's crazy. Also on Voyager, he played Niera in the episode Emanations. All right. Soundtrack grade, I'm going to give it a PP for piano poo.
PP.
Brian liked it. The rest of us, whatever. All right. It's your chance. It's your time. It's your time to shine. Get on the stage and sum this thing up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
The Firm, a movie about how lawyers are a bunch of scumbags and government agents are a bunch of scumbags. And holy shit, there's a pyramid in Memphis. That looks so cool.
Bunch of scumbags. Brian Dunaway.
The Firm, taking the bar exam would be more entertaining than this movie and shorter. Wait, do they have the bar exam? Does it have multiple choices?
I don't know.
I meant to ask that.
I don't know. I'm no lawyer.
Yeah, according to Gene Hackman, because remember, it's A, you do what the IRS says, B.
Right.
Oh, that's right. He did try it. You know what's funny? We never actually saw much lawyering in the movie.
Well, that was the point. There was never a case. The only lawyering you saw when he was lawyered for his... how much he was making
in his interview. Yeah.
That was it.
Objection.
Sustained.
Sustained. Brian Ibbett.
The Firm. I hear that no associate from that firm ever failed a bar exam. And nobody failed the woman on the beach making you touch her boob exam either.
That's a horrible exam.
Yeah, it was a bad exam. All right. This just handed to me. Hold on a second. Oh, look. It's the alternate title. Sweaty Forehead Man.
Golly, he was so greasy and sweaty.
That was number one. Or, yeah. Warning, Wilford Brimley says oral and it's gross. That's your other one. Here's your emails. We got emails this week. Got one from Cam who wrote in. Says, aloha, Randy, Scott, Brian, and Brian. I've been listening to your shows on and off since high school. I started with The Instance, then ELR, now FilmSack. And I just wanted to say thank you for God knows how many years of long drives, flights, yard work, and awkward family visits to my homophobic uncles that you've gotten me through. I love the show, but I do have a suggestion. You really, really need to say, quote, no homo, unquote, at the end of every episode. Scott, you talk more about men than any straight guy I've ever met. Just saying. Anyway, here's to another, 10 years of you guys doing your thing. Cheers, Cam. So I'm gonna make an assumption that Cam is gay and that's why he doesn't like his homophobic uncle's house. And B, he's somehow seeing me talking about dudes a lot and that I need to make sure people know that it means I'm not gay. But I don't think I talk about dudes
a lot. It's actually one of the interesting things about the problem with Hollywood. You know, the big problem is that it's been a boys' club for 100 years and it's really, really hard for women to rise to the top. And there are almost no women actually making movies. You know, like they get in, there's a few that are making some money, but for the most part, it's really, really misogynistic environment.
Sure.
Well, if you got four guys sitting around talking about movies every week, we end up talking about men. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. That's the way movies are. It's actually hard for us to find movies that are primarily about women and women's issues. Like 9 to 5 stands out in the film sack list.
That's true. But I don't think we ever, I don't remember anyway, ever going, oh yeah, that guy, I could marry it. Like once in a while, I get a little funny about Jude Law occasionally, but that's really it.
I think it's a reflection of what we do, which is we review films from, you know, 70s, 80s, and the 90s primarily, and there was a total different culture than it is now, and I think we notice that in the movies a lot. So we end up talking about that a lot, talking about, oh, how weird was it in the 70s when we were so homophobic and now it's just so widely accepted.
Yeah.
I think that's the reason why we end up discussing it a lot.
But like I just disagree with the sentiment. Like if Scott says, you know, man, I'd marry Sam Rockwell if I wasn't already married or whatever.
Yeah.
Like you don't want to follow that with no homo, because that's exactly what Scott's point is purely homo feeling. Like what are you gonna do about that?
Yeah. Right. It's a little bit odd. Also, and I would agree with you that for every Catherine Bigelow in Hollywood, there's like 50 James Camerons. So
that's the thing. We just don't have a lot of women to talk about on these movies. We look for them. We certainly try.
I didn't bring her up just because they used to be married. I just want to point that out. They just seem like good names to use, because Catherine Bigelow is, you know, she's a big time filmmaker. Point Break, Strange Days, Zero Dark 30, Hurt Locker. She's got it going on. K-19, The Widowmaker. You know what's funny is I'm realizing as I'm reading these off, they are all very dude, let's go to the movies though, isn't it?
Starring mostly dudes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Dudes go to the movie.
I like it.
Mean, Hurt Locker had one female in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Was she in the locker? I've never seen a Hurt Locker. I don't even know what it's about.
Hurt Locker is Jeremy Renner defusing bombs in Iraq. It's pretty good.
It's great.
Yeah, it's different than you think, though.
What is the Hurt Locker? What is it?
It's this psychological construct for soldiers who've been under a lot of stress and.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere around the world, they find themselves unable to ever let go of what they experienced.
And they can't not only let go, but they have to go back to it. Like the whole point of that movie was that he put his arrows away, said goodbye to Black Widow and went back out and defused bombs for a while.
You know, Brian.
You got me, man.
You know, I'm weird when it comes to certain things. And if a name makes me feel like that's stupid, like... Mm-hmm. Hurt Locker makes me think it's going to be stupid, so I haven't watched the movie at all.
Oh, because you should see it. I think you should see it.
The name sounds stupid.
It's cool. Yeah. It's pretty hardcore, too. I liked it.
What I'm saying is good. Jeremy Renner, no hetero.
Yeah, no hetero.
No hetero. No hetero.
Mike Ballard. No hetero. I got one more email. Mike Ballard wrote in and says, Raiders of the Lost Ark Descent he is providing here, because we've talked a bit about Raiders lately. Just to play devil's advocate, what about the fact that if Indiana Jones did not exist in this universe, this movie would have ended exactly the same way it ended with Indy not being involved. Did Indy stop Bellick from getting the idol? No. Did he stop the Nazis from getting the Ark? No. Was Indy involved in the Nazis being killed at the end of the movie? No. The only thing that would be different would be the arc is at the end of the movie. With Indy, the arc is buried in the warehouse somewhere in U.S. soil. Without Indy, the arc stays put where the Nazis opened it. Keep up the good work. Love the show, Mike.
So what would you're they
have
saying...
Would they ever have found the temple, though? Because they were digging in the wrong place if Indy hadn't come along and shown them.
Yeah. Or would the monkey have died, or would Indy have died instead of the monkey?
Well, no, I think Marion would have died, right?
Because
Tot would have killed her in the bar, trying to retrieve the cane topper.
The pendant. Right.
Right. But would she have? I guess she would have been there anyway. Mm-hmm. I like this kind of thought experiment for sure. But
this
this
was a thing on Big Bang Theory that they brought up that, oh yeah, wouldn't have mattered if, you know, Indiana Jones wasn't involved. And I think somebody later on pointed out, well, no, I think Marion would have died.
Yeah. Or she would have been blinded or killed at the end, even if she'd have made it that far. So let's say, forget about the bar scene. You get her all the way tied to the post. Oh yeah. Right. She wouldn't have been there at all.
Right.
When did she get kidnapped by Bellick? When was that?
Well, because right after that, because they were trying to chase down Indy, right?
Oh, wait. Because he got her the dress. I don't remember when that happened. But even if she was, let's just, for the sake of saying, she's at the end, she's tied to the pole, and she doesn't have Han Solo going, close your eyes, Marion, close your eyes.
Right.
That thing belongs in a museum, Dad. I mean, he wasn't there to do that. Then she would have died just like the rest of those dumb Nazis. She'd have melted like a candle. Just like the rest of those dumb Nazis,
Dumb Nazis.
Oh,
I feel like the inverse of this is equally bad. The whole thing where if they don't happen to meet Han Solo at the time they do, and if he doesn't happen to have a second in command who is Chewbacca, and so on and so on, like you end up building up so much happenstance to get to a resolution that's any good, that I feel like it's too unlikely. The whole thing, it's just so very very unlikely. I actually feel worse about that when movies depend on ridiculous circumstances.
Do you think there is any fan fiction out there that begins right when that girl in class flutters her I love you eyes at him and then he just leaves with her and starts a life with her and never does any of this gallivanting around the world?
That's a good question.
I think if
Han didn't shoot first, I think it would have been a totally different.
Well, yeah. I like the idea of alternate universes splitting off from each other, kind of like the old parallel universe idea. So, you know, like the idea that I either pick this paper up or I didn't, and now two versions of that universe have split off and are going. And the idea that movies could do that is really interesting. And you could take any movie and say, you know, what if Tom Cruise broke his neck flipping in the streets with that kid
on Beale Street?
Yeah. And the rest of it just became
a great
movie. Yeah. The rest of the movie was like Butterfly and the, what was that called?
Chaos Theory, the Butterfly Effect.
Yeah. Or something like that.
I like it. So you're kind of thinking like Million Dollar Baby, kind of like in the middle of this movie.
Kind of,
would be much better.
Yeah. Right? Or just take any popular movie and do that and see what happens. I don't know. You could have some fun fanfic is all I'm getting at.
I'm just, there's a universe where they don't happen to run into Han Solo when they do. They get different passage and none of the rebellion happens, but there's a couple of guys on the Death Star who trip and blow the whole thing up. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I love it. I love that idea. Or, you know, two Ewoks didn't do their job to crush that walker, and that thing just destroyed an entire generation of Ewok bears. I mean, that would have been great or terrible, depending on your point of view. Well, the winners write history, and so do we. Next week, Anacrophobia.
Oh, no way. Get out.
Yeah.
John Goodman.
Also have not seen that movie.
So. Have you seen that movie? It's a great movie.
Nope. I feel like I'm on a
you
run
know
here.
Where I'm going to be at on this movie?
Oh, you don't like spiders or you do? I don't remember.
No, I love this movie. It's one of my favorites.
Okay. Everyone else has seen it but me.
I have not seen it. We're gonna do spiders 1 week, we decided to do insects the next.
Oh, what's the one after this?
We're gonna watch Phase
spiders
4.
Phase 4, I have no idea what that is.
Phase 4 is a 40-year-old movie about desert ants collecting intelligence and waging war on humanity.
I'm in.
It's a card game too, isn't it?
Same rules, incidentally.
Connect 4.
Right? Yeah, Connect 4. Same rules, giant ants try to Connect 4 and sneak, pretty sneaky,
then they disappear.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, that's a different game. It's pretty sneaky, sis. What's that one?
Candy Crush.
Oh, that's the one. That's the Connect Four. You get pretty sneaky, sis.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've learned something today. Thank you all for being with us.
Got a fun list of films coming up.
Yeah, what else? What's after that?
I want to suggest people let us know what they're looking for. You see something on Netflix streaming that you want us to watch, let us know. Because beyond Phase 4, we're going to watch the Jackie Chan movie, The Accidental Spy.
Yeah.
We're going to watch Turbulence. Yeah. Anybody seen Turbulence?
Nope.
Holly Berry, right?
No. That would be, you're thinking,
Red Eye?
Monster.
Lauren Holly. Lauren Holly.
Lauren Holly.
Oh, yeah.
Ray Liotta.
I have seen that one. Yeah, that's a great one. Oh, I can't wait to see that one again.
I've never seen it.
But it's going to be good for this.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I can't wait.
Yeah, there's, we got Night of the Creeps. The Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Cyborg is on our list.
Oh, dude. Ooh. I have seen that. I love that.
Really looking forward to that.
Well, I loved that.
Is that a Ray Liotta on that Turbulence?
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. And Holly Berry when everyone, or Holly, sorry, Holly.
Lauren Holly.
Lauren Holly when everyone thought she was going to have a huge career and then it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's too bad. Jim Carrey screwed her up. Bastard. all right. Well, all of those sound great. We will hurtle toward them at high speed. Everybody join us next week for a new episode. The website is filmsack.com. Our email address is filmsack@gmail.com. On Twitter, follow us at filmsack. And as always, leave us reviews wherever podcasts are found. It's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
Run.
What not?
frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Thank you guys for listening to the show. It's just a quick reminder, if you'd like to support Film Sack and other shows on the Frog Pants Network, there's a great way to do it, and it can be super inexpensive. Let's say $1 a month. I mean, what else do you spend as little as $1 a month on? And you're getting all this entertainment. 4 episodes of Film Sack, umpteen episodes of other shows, all for free right now. Well, if it's valuable to you, throw us a little money. Not to be a ton, just a little bit. Go to patreon.com/frogpants and help us out. That's patreon.com/frogpants.